Hello everyone, welcome to Trolley Wheel Logic. Happy New Year to everyone watching out there, and welcome to 2013. Like I said, this is Trolley Wheel Logic, a live bi-weekly internet podcast thingy. We talk about atheism, skepticism, science, and general secular issues. So like I said, we do take calls, and if you want to call in, the contact is Trolley Wheel Logic. Please put in what your question subject is, and we'll add you in due time. Please do not call us. Like I said, it annoys me too much. Also, if you do call in, the whole show is later uploaded to iTunes and YouTube. So if you call in, you are giving us permission to use your likeness. So without further ado, I'll introduce my team for tonight. And as always, with me, the Kitch.
Hey, guys.
And Martimar. And back after a long sabbatical, Lundy.
Greetings, everybody.
And the newbie to the team, Pony. Welcome to Trolley Wheel Logic.
Thank you. Hello.
And special guest, the International Relations Director for Danish Atheist Society, Tilsen.
Hello.
Yes, and I got your title right for once. So I think I'll hand over to Lundy now to introduce our very special guest tonight. Take it away, Lundy.
Greetings to everyone watching Trolling with Logic. Welcome to Trolling with Logic in the year 2013, post-Mayan apocalypse. Welcome to the show, and welcome to our guest, president of the American Atheists and graduate of my own personal place of study, Penn State University, go Lions. Wow. Regular guest on Fox News, where he's called all sorts of names like fascist and questioned as to why the hell the tides go in and out. Professional atheist and Bill O'Reilly troll, David Silverman.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thanks for coming.
It's a pleasure to have you on.
So I think, Lundy, you can take away with the first questions.
Sure. The first question I have is, when I was doing a little bit of research on you for the show, I found out that you've been pretty vocal about your atheism, at least since high school. What began this whole kind of crusade for you?
You mean when did I become, an active vocal atheist? Is
yeah.
that what your question is? Okay. So I've been an atheist since I was a child, and I've never been closeted. I was bar mitzvahed as an atheist, and I was confirmed as an atheist. My parents didn't care. My mother was convinced I was going through a phase. And then what happened was I went to undergraduate college, at Brandeis University near Boston. And that was – I went there for the very simple reason that it was the best school that accepted me. It also happened to be a very heavily Jewish school. So – My second day in school, I learned the difference. I'll be as non-specific as I can, but I learned the difference between an Orthodox Jewish girl and a conservative Jewish girl. A conservative Jewish girl and an Orthodox Jewish girl will do exactly, behave exactly the same way. They eat kosher food. They have the whole flipping on those light switches on the Sabbath thing. But an Orthodox Jewish girl is a lot less likely to have a fulfilling relationship with an atheist, if you know what I mean. So I started dating these conservative Jewish girl, and that meant that I had to eat with her. You know, that's what you do. You eat together. And when they have a kosher cafeteria next to a non-kosher cafeteria, everything is color-coded. And so I would take my non-kosher brown tray across the cafeteria to sit with my kosher girlfriend and all of her kosher friends. So if you can imagine a sea of green trays and one brown tray in the middle. Okay, so you could see the atheist way over there. And I was in the middle of all these conservative and Orthodox Jews. Now, as some of you may know, Jews don't proselytize. They don't go off to, they don't knock on your door and ask you to become Jewish. However, one thing that the Orthodox Jews will do is they will proselytize to non-religious Jews to become more religious. That's their thing. And what happened was I would sit down for breakfast and lunch and dinner with my girlfriend with my brown tray, and the Orthodox Jews would sit down right next to me and begin their spiel. and the debates ensued. And this is when I first started to debate. And I had read, at this point, exactly two books on atheism. I'd read The Case Against God by George H. Smith, and I'd read The Selfish Gene, which really isn't an atheist book, by Richard Dawkins. And yet, with only those two under my belt, I was easily winning the debates. And these were not easy debates. These were debates against people who were studying to be rabbis and who had been religious for their whole lives and who studied Torah and Talmud all the time, well, religiously. And I kept winning. And I ended up becoming very good friends with all of them, married one of my opponents, who was an Orthodox Jew at the time, but now has become Reform, which is much more mellow. And then about 1996, I went to a Promise Keepers rally. Now, I don't know if you all remember the Promise Keepers, and I'm thrilled that not too many people do, but back in the 1990s, they were huge. They were a Christian men's group, a horribly misogynistic men's group. They basically said that men should go to their wives and apologize for not taking control of the family as the Bible has dictated. They should apologize for not being in charge of everything in the family. And they really made me angry. So one time they were protesting, and they were having this big million man march type of thing in Washington, D.C., and I decided to go. I was a professional inventor at Bell Labs at the time. I had internet before anybody else did, or before many people did. And I found this organization called American Atheists, which had this very rudimentary webpage, which had a very rudimentary statement out that they were going to have a protest for the Promise Keepers. So I went. And I went to this Promise Keepers event, and I went into the event, and I listened to them, because I didn't want to protest them without listening to them first. And I listened to them for probably 20 minutes, half an hour, and I got enraged at the misogyny that was coming out, the hypocrisy that was coming out, the cafeteria Christianity that was oozing from every speaker. And I went back to the American Atheist, the pen that they had put us in, and CNN was there. And I started screaming and yelling, and CNN was filming it because I was angry. I was really angry. And the bad news is that they never aired what I said. The good news is that what came out was really good. I don't remember what it was, but it was really good, and I was very happy with it. And other people heard it, and they asked me to become an activist, and I went home. And I sat down with my Jewish wife, and I said, hey, I want to be an atheist activist. And without hesitation, my wife said, I should do it, without hesitation. And I can freely and will freely admit that my wife is far more supportive of me than I would be if she were trying to be a Jewish activist. I could not support her as much as she supports me in my atheist activism. But that's where it all started. I became an atheist activist in 1997, state director for New Jersey, really pushed hard for a while, and then I kind of moved up the American Atheist ladder, becoming national spokesperson and then vice president, and then I was elected president in 2010.
Fantastic. Yeah. And 2010 is about the time when you started appearing on different news programs and national television. You make a lot of appearances on public television. You're a fairly well-known face, if for no other reason than because of the meme that's been spread of your
right.
face, which we have in the banner for everybody who's interested. it's a very memorable thing. So you're very memorable. You're very well-known. Is there any, like, pushback from perhaps the local community as far as your family is concerned, people who know you and disapprove of what it is that you do, and so they kind of, I don't know, protest what it is you do?
Well, I get a lot of protests and I get a lot of pushback, but none of it is from the local community. I haven't received any negative local community feedback actually ever. My daughter goes to public high school. She is, you know, a teenager now, but she's always been the daughter of an atheist activist. And I've been on television for longer than I've been president. I was national spokesperson for 4 years, so I've been going on television for a while. And yeah, I get a lot of hate mail and a lot of threats, but nothing from the local community. I can say I would say zero from the local community that would be negative. Sure, some people disagree with me, but I would not say that I've received any sort of hate or any sort of threats from the local community. No, not bad. And my daughter has not. I mean, she gets her standard, you know, school stuff. Kids pick on each other all the time, but not really about that so much. Not really about atheism and not about me. First of all, I live in New Jersey, which is East Coast, northeastern United States. It's pretty tolerant here. There's lots of atheists in New Jersey, and I think that's the secret.
It's strange because New Jersey isn't exactly known for its hospitality to people. So it's just weird to see that, like, it's totally cool here. Everyone's totally cool with what I do here.
Well, yeah. It's a high pressure state, but that's because of our proximity to New York. And, you know, I mean, I can drive to New York real quick, and it gives us a high pressure. You know, there's a palpable pace to New Jersey. And if you go west, even just a few hundred miles, it really slows down. If you go out to, like, you know, mid Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where I used to live, it's a very, very different pace. But here in New Jersey, it's a very fast pace, but it's very diverse. That's the thing about New Jersey. It's extremely diverse. There's everyone here. And that means there's a lot of atheists and there's a lot of science here. And that also helps. Remember, New Jersey is where Bell Labs is, or was. That's where I used to work. Also Telcordia, also Johnson & Johnson. There's a lot of technology here, and that implies a lot of atheism.
It's weird that you would mention Harrisburg. I actually live in Pennsylvania. I'm about an hour away from Harrisburg. It's not a very far away place for me. I always considered Pennsylvania to sort of be the bow tie of the Bible Belt. Very, very conservative state, very high-profile Christian state. If you look at letters to the editor in, like, any newspaper in the state, you'll find plenty of people bitching about evolution being taught in schools. It's not a very atheist-friendly state. So did that help pressure you at all to get involved in the atheist activism, the fact that you were at least in your college years, you were in a state that was very, very conservative?
Well, in my college years, undergraduate, I was in Boston. Graduate school, I went to Penn State in University Park, which is a town around a huge university. So that really doesn't count as a state. That's really its own little entity inside the state. But then I lived in Harrisburg for 2 years, and I was the first atheist a lot of people had ever met. In fact, a lot of people didn't actually believe me when I said I was an atheist. That's where I got told not to say I was an atheist by my friends. Don't say that. Don't say that. Well, yeah, that's what I am. No, don't say that. But this was 1991, 1992. Times were different back then. I've been back to Harrisburg since then a few times. Harrisburg has a couple of large, thriving atheist organizations now that didn't used to exist, and I'm very happy to be that way, that way. But yeah, when I was back in Harrisburg, I got a lot of pressure, not so much from my local community, but because I wasn't an activist back then, but I was an outed atheist, and the people who knew me didn't like it, and they made it known. And too bad. You know, that never really stopped me from saying anything.
Yeah, there's a sort of Streisand effect when people say that you should not talk about your atheism in this area, because it tends to make you want to do it even more.
It
tends to make you want to be a lot more vocal. It's really weird. So I actually encourage people to keep trying to discourage atheism, because the more you push, the more you tend to have us fight back a lot harder.
That's
really helpful to us when you try to discourage us. So keep going on, keep doing that. So you're regularly brought on to Fox News as sort of like the representative of all atheists. But regularly it's seen that on Fox News, what they do when they bring you on is they have you on specifically just to like kind of beat up on you. There was the hurricane thing that you were on for, like how do atheists prepare for a hurricane, where you had like four people on there telling you that you're being very condescending to believers and blah, blah, blah. Bill O'Reilly regularly has you on for, you know, attacking Christmas and being a fascist. I don't understand. Why would you continue to go on to Fox News, of all places, knowing what they get you on there for, when you could be going to places like, I don't know, CNN, MSNBC, a lot more atheist-friendly atmosphere, I think. Is there a reason why you go to Fox?
Yes. And first of all, there's a very big misnomer in what you just said. It's not that I'm going to Fox News where I could be going on to MSNBC or CNN. That is not the case. I go where I'm invited. They invite me on.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, what?
The sound got cut off there. Could you repeat that again?
Yeah, just cut out.
Sure. Sure. A lot of people, I just want to make it clear that it's not that I'm passing up CNN or MSNBC to go on Fox News. Fox News is inviting me on, and other news organizations invite me on less often. In fact, one of the reasons I go on to Fox News is because CNN and NBC and CBS and MSNBC watch Fox News, and they want to see what Fox News is talking about. Another reason I go on Fox News is to give them rope. I do like to give them rope. I like it when Bill O'Reilly comes off, you know, tie goes out, therefore God exists. That's great stuff. I like going on to Stuart Varney when I can, you know, ask a simple question, did God send the hurricane? You know, the real easy questions that nobody's ever considered. The last time I went on Stuart Varney's show, he was making jokes about Madeleine Murray O'Hare's death. You know, it was just the kind of thing, you know, Madeleine Murray O'Hare founded American Atheist, and then she and her son and her granddaughter were murdered and dismembered and buried in a shallow grave. And Stuart Varney was making jokes about that. And I thought that was hideous. And the thing to consider is, and the question that I would ask you is this, if it wasn't for me going on those shows, let's just talk about Hannity and O'Reilly for a moment. If it wasn't for me and other people like me going on those shows, would you watch those shows at all? A lot of people will say, no, I would never watch those shows. They're shit. They're crap. Why in the world would I watch Bill O'Reilly? Well, it's important that we watch O'Reilly and Hannity, because it's important that we be reminded how low these people are and what they will do to get their way. O'Reilly actually tried to redefine Christianity as a philosophy instead of a religion for a very specific reason. He wanted to do it because he wanted the government to be able to endorse it. He wanted to get the special privileges from the government so that and have it not involve the separation of church and state, because Christianity is not a religion. So I wanted to make sure that people understand our side would not watch their side if not for our side appearing on those shows. Our side would not be aware of how bad they are and how low they're willing to stoop without us going on and giving them the rope to hang themselves. Yes, I'm a fascist because I want the government to treat everybody equally. I put up a billboard, so I'm trampling the rights of Christians nationwide. It's important that our side, that the secular people, see that coming from them and be reminded of the fact that we are not fighting honest, good, organized people here. And we're not fighting Christian people either. We're fighting Christianity. We're fighting the Christian right. And these people are not nice people. They're not good people. They're liars. They're cheaters. And they will do whatever they can to preserve an unjust inequality from our government, up to and including changing the definition of the words and saying that, I don't know, therefore God did it.
Very good points. It is a good point to say that if we didn't have like someone like you on Bill O'Reilly's show, we were much less likely to watch his show. And as you said, for good reason, because even when you're not on the show, even when he just says people who purely disagree with him on the show, he'll say things that are blatantly incorrect about the separation of church and state, about the First Amendment, about all these different things, just promoting a very myopic worldview. And it's important that we understand that is coming from that area and what exactly it is that we're fighting. Before I get into audience questions, we do have some audience questions in the chat room here. I just want to say that on a personal level, when Bill O'Reilly tried to redefine Christianity as a philosophy, speaking as a philosophy student who is trying to get his PhD in the subject, that really angered me. The fact that he could say that, like, I know Christians who would tell him, you are wrong in every sense of the word to say that. You are an incorrect person, and you should be very saddened by the fact that you said something that stupid. Because no philosophy, if it's just a philosophy, it's not concerned with this huge metaphysical construct that is the source of all things that exist. It's not concerned with ultimate purpose in the universe like that. It's just, there's so many things that are intrinsic within Christianity that is not within a basic philosophy. And that's really
angry. You should not be expecting truth from Bill O'Reilly. You should not be expecting truth. You should be expecting hype. And I'll tell you something that's specific to that show. After that show, something new and fresh happened to me that really had never happened to me before after I'd gone on an appearance. I got 6 different calls from 6 different Christian people who called to tell me, A, they disagree with me, B, I'm not a fascist, and C, Christianity is a religion. 6 different Christians called me just after that show just to tell me, no, I'm still a Christian, I still disagree with you, but he was wrong there. And that's great, isn't it? Now that really exposes to them how fallible Bill O'Reilly is. And they're not used to taking their cues from fallible people.
Yeah, it's definitely good to see that there's a level of absurdity that Fox News and the people who spread these very damaging political views, the fact that they can get to a certain level and at that point they've broken a limit as far as many other Christians are concerned, and that's where the limit is, and they say, whoa, you're going a bit too far. It's very good to get them that far. So let's move on to some audience questions. By the way, anybody who does want to ask a question to David Silverman, you can type the question into the chat room on blogtv.com/people/trollingwithlogic, or you can add Trolling with Logic onto your Skype, and you can call in and ask a question live. The first question we have is from Nicole SD, wants to know what your reaction was the first time you saw the crocoduck.
So what did I miss?
Oh, by the way, everybody, Admiral Casey is here, one of our regular co-hosts, just came onto the show. Currently, we're asking audience questions to David Silverman. As a reminder, Trolling with Logic on your Skype if you want to ask him live. blogtv.com/people/trollingwithlogic if you want to go to the blog TV and ask the questions within the chat room. So we are on a question by Nicole SD. How did he feel when he first saw the crocoduck?
Well, I first, that was Kirk Cameron. And Kirk Cameron and what's his name?
Ray Comfort. Yeah.
Ray Comfort. I have actually met Ray Comfort, and I've okay. So the crocoduck and the Ray Comfort thing actually do have a substantial impact, or at least they had a substantial effect on me, because it was through Ray Comfort and through this whole crocoduck thing and through the whole banana thing that I realized that people who bash evolution know nothing about it at all. And it's something that we really have to understand as atheists. And that is that the Christians who push away from evolution, who say evolution is flawed, who say evolution doesn't happen, they do not understand it at all. They're completely out of the loop. They talk about macro versus microevolution. They talk about cats giving birth to dogs. Like does not give birth to non-like. They have all these great ways of saying things that make no sense at all if you know even a cursory understanding of evolution and how it works. And this is a problem that's facing our nation. You know, a lot of people say, well, what does religion do? How does religion actually hurt? Well, this is how it hurts. 40% of our country doesn't believe in evolution. And I'm willing to go out on a limb and say 99.9% of the people who don't understand, don't believe in evolution, don't understand the first thing about it. They think we should have crocoducks. And then the reason that somebody would come out with something as asinine as what Kirk and Comfort came out with is because they don't understand it. They don't understand it because they don't want to learn about it, or they're trying to just hide the fact. You know, the religion is a game of the conned and the conners. Those are the only two people in religion, the conned and the conners. So either these people are deliberately hiding and disguising what we know to be true, or they're just simply not, or they're just simply ignorant of it. And it was the Ray Comfort, it was the Kirk Cameron, it was the Crocoduck that really got that understanding into my head that these people aren't just anti-evolution, they're anti-evolution because they don't have a clue on how it works. And that's a failure in our education system in a great big way.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you also forgot peanut butter.
Oh, yes, the peanut butter. If evolution is true, then not always, but every once in a while, when I open up this jar of peanut butter, there should be life inside.
Right.
The peanut butter
it is amazing how little they know. And the question is, do they know that little, or are they lying through their teeth?
That's actually my idea is that a lot of them understand that what they're saying is in fact a misrepresentation of evolution, but lying for Jesus is the one kind of lie that's okay, I guess. So moving on to more questions by the chat room, Power 666 would like to know, why is it did you lose the iconic goatee?
I wish I had a better answer. It just itched a lot. And that's just it, you know? I mean, I know that the marketing side of me, I do have an MBA. The meme has a goatee. The meme was taking off. But it was really, really itchy, folks. And I've had different facial hairs during my life. I had a full beard at one time. I've had a goatee a few times. But at this specific time, it was... We were just not getting along, and I wish there were some great, better reason, but it just itched the hell out of my face, and I had to shave it off. That's the only reason.
I thought it was because it made you look like Satan.
The Colbert said it made me look like Satan, and that's why he gave me the Mr. Atheist pants, or that's when he gave me the Mr. Atheist pants, Twitter handle. But no, I thought I looked really good. I really actually like the way I look in a goatee. I just don't like the way I feel in a goatee. And that's all there
was
to it.
I wish
I had a better answer.
There are plenty of us that will be rocking the goatee in your stead, so it's all good.
Rock and roll.
All right. Next question by Relics Bane. Any good feedback from Fox News viewers after they see your interviews? Is there anybody who watches and says, hey, I'm a viewer of Fox News, and I think you raised some good points here?
Oh, yeah, tons of them. Yeah. And it's becoming more and more common. that I get positive reviews. Of course, I get crap loads of hate and death threats like crazy. But especially after the O'Reilly interview and the Hannity interview, I get positive feedback from Christian Fox viewers via email that say, you know what, I understand what you're doing. You know, you're asking for equality, and maybe I'll even support you in your quest for equality. So absolutely, yes, it's grown recently. But in the past few appearances that I've been on, I've gotten a substantial amount of positive feedback from Fox News Christian viewers. I also would like to mention that Fox News is I don't want to say entirely, but there's a lot of people at Fox News who are atheists. A lot of people at Fox News are atheists. So when I go there, I'm always greeted and treated very well, because they love what I do. And, you know, the boom guy, the mic guy, the camera guy, they go out of their way to say, I'm one of you, you know, and thanks for what you're doing. And, you know, they won't say it too loud, and some people do say it loud, but it's very encouraging to get that kind of feedback from both Fox News employees and viewers when I go on and supposedly get battered, but I don't think I get battered very much at all.
One more question, and we're going to move. Oh, go ahead, Kitch.
I just want to ask, just out of morbid curiosity, have you ever been asked a question that's, don't know what the right way to say this, stupider than the infamous Bill O'Reilly question?
Have I ever been asked a question stupider than tide goes in, tide goes out, can't explain that? Well, that's about as ignorant as you can get. That question is, I don't understand, therefore God did it. You know, I'm sure the answer to that is yes, but nothing is popping into my mind. A lot of people, the ignorant questions are fading as time goes on. I don't think, well, let's see. Nothing comes to mind. I wish I could think of it, but I can tell you that I have been called worse names than fascist, and worse names than hypocrite, and worse names than what did Hannity call me? He called me
I don't even remember.
I don't remember either. Narcissist.
A narcissist.
A narcissist. One person actually called me an intellectual terrorist, which has to be the stupidest insult I've ever been given, and that was given to me at a local meeting by a member of the of a Unitarian congregation, a liberal Unitarian congregation, called me an intellectual terrorist for putting up billboards. That's the stupidest insult I've ever been given.
That's along the lines of being called like an intellectual elitist. Like, how dare you be intelligent? You know, almost along those lines.
Oh, I mean, to say that I'm a terrorist, to use the word terrorist, because I do such things as call religion a myth, which it is, call religion a scam, which it is, and put up a billboard or four, which I do. You know, it's amazing that people would go so far as to demonize your own side because they disagree with you a little bit on your methods. It's very disconcerting, and it's really something that we as a movement have to get past. There's a lot of fighting in this movement about, you know, you should do it this way, you should do it that way, your billboards should say this and their billboard should say that, and there's a lot of people pointing their guns inside the movement, and I really wish people would just stop and point their guns outside the movement, because we all have common enemies here and common adversaries, and we're not in, none of them are inside the movement. The movement's very diverse. The only thing that holds us together is our atheism. I'm a gun owner. I support a small government and a strong military. One might call me a Republican if I was able to vote Republican. And a lot of people disagree with me on a lot of those things, but we're all fighting this. So we have, essentially, we have the thinnest possible movement, okay? And when I say the thinnest possible movement, I mean that there's only one thread of thing, one thing that holds us together. There's not, if you look at the gay rights movement, there's gay marriage, there's transgenders, there's gay rights, there's gays being fired, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that hold them together. With atheism, the only thing that holds us together is our lack of belief in a deity. And that makes our movement very thin. And that means that we need not fight each other, that we actually need to fight outside of that line.
That actually is, that's actually a very good segue into the next question that was asked by user on the blog TV, Tim Brooks. He asked, what your particular view on the Atheism Plus movement is.
Well, I think Atheism Plus is a well-meaning group. I mean, there are a lot of people that I know and like and respect that are pushing for Atheism Plus. There are also people I know and like and respect that are pushing against it. Atheism Plus is really a matter of common sense and feminism attached into the atheism movement. What some people don't understand is that a lot of atheists are repulsed by being told anything that looks like religion. Okay? So they come to American Atheists. American Atheists is hardline atheism. We just do atheism. AHA, American Humanist Association, they put a few rules of behavior around their atheism, you know, guidelines, you know, being nice to people and stuff like that. What people have to realize is that a lot of atheists don't want to be told what to do. They don't want guidelines at all. Even if they agree with them 100%, they don't want guidelines. And it is my perception that American atheists specifically, we have to focus on atheism. We do not have to focus on anything that brings that, on anything that shrinks that or brings that into a more narrow bent. We need to focus on atheism and the normalization of atheism. And that's where American Atheists is going to be focusing. If we focus on anything else, we're going to be shrinking our universe. And I don't want to shrink our universe. I want to grow our universe. And that includes the people who don't want to be told what to do. And that's, you know, that's what American Atheists has always been. That's why there's always been an American Atheist and an AHA. Because there's a segment of the atheist population that do not want moral guidelines. Now, that does not and should not imply that we don't have code of conduct for our events. We were the very first ones to come out with a strong code of conduct for our events that demands that people be treated reasonably well and with courtesy and with dignity and respect across gender, across sexual identity, across everything at our events. And that's something that we are very, very, you know, very, very proud of. But from an organizational perspective, American Atheists is going to be focusing on the larger picture of all of atheism, including the atheists who don't want to be told to behave in a certain way.
All right. Good points made all around on that one. I think we can pretty much agree that, in the long run, you can go ahead and come up with these different organizations to promote humanism, to promote feminism, to promote all these different things. But the main thing that we are concerned with is the atheism part about it and promoting that in the public eye. So there's two more questions from the audience. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry about that. We do have a caller. Came in a while ago. I forgot completely about her. Our caller is Donna Logston. Donna Logston. Do you have a question for Dave then?
Well, we haven't done a sound check. Can you hear me?
Yes,
I can hear you just fine.
Oh, fantastic. First of all, it's Dana. Thank you. And my surname is I am the talking primate. And I just wanted to tell David Silverman, well, I want to tell him something first. I want to say thank you so much for your involvement with the Reason Rally. Had a great time, and it brought a lot of people together, and I know people that are still talking about it, so thank you for that.
Man, thank you for the acknowledgement. I appreciate it. I'm glad you had a good time.
I have two questions. First of all, when's the next one?
2016. And we're going to run it on the four-year schedule with the national elections, with the presidential elections. And we have taken the Reason Rally Coalition, which is a separate organization from American Atheists. The Reason Rally Coalition is, it's a membership organization based on all of the participants, all of the organizations. We're putting it now, very, very shortly into almost a mothball status, where we'll just hold it until 2014, which actually is next year. And then we'll just start it up again. I don't think I'm going to be running the next one. I don't want to run the next one. I think it's time for me to hand it. You know, it should be handed off to someone else. I'm really looking forward to not working that hard ever again. But I'm thrilled that you came, and I'm thrilled that it happened. I still can't go through all of those pictures that I took from the stage and not get a little bit of a tear in my eye, because, you know, for that kind of an event to happen in the rain, it was just, I was just so proud of all of the activists, of all the people who came to this event. We were expecting something smaller, and we got something massive. And the entire movement saw it, and all the organizations saw how well things work out when we all put our shit to the side and work toward our common goal, and we come up with something as spectacular as that was. I'm really proud of it, and I'm very glad you had a good time, and we'll be doing it again in 2016.
Well, thank you for that. And my last final question is, and you've probably answered this on several occasions, so it should be a softball for you. What's the most dangerous thing about religion as you see it?
Ignorance. It's the most dangerous thing about religion is that it stops people from thinking. And when it stops people from thinking, it makes them pawns. It makes them controllable and controlled. The most dangerous thing about religion is that it gives people control over other people. People just give their control away. And this is across all religions. You know, as soon as you say that somebody knows more than you about what the ruler of the universe wants, you give your control away. You give your life away. You give your money away. That's why religion is so strong, because it has taken the money and the influence from all those individual people and put it into one thing. The most dangerous part of religion is that it preaches ignorance, and extols into ignorance. It puts faith, which is what ignorance is, they call it faith, but it makes it a virtue. And it makes that ignorance a virtue. It makes not knowing what evolution is, but hating it anyway, a virtue. And if not for the atheist movement, it would be the downfall of this country. Because 40% of us don't understand basic science right now. They think God did it is reasonable science. And the rest of the world is just laughing at us. And we know it. And we can see it. And other people's children are going to have an advantage over our children because they know what science is and they know what critical thinking is.
It is true. Okay, you get out. The word.
Yeah, Marty.
One at a time, okay. Please.
I just wanted to say that we in the rest of the world, not all of us, laugh at you. Some of us are genuinely concerned because, I mean, 8 years with Bush on the button, and there are worse people who are even dumber.
Yes.
Yeah, we're the ones with
access
the guns.
To nukes. I mean,
it's
scary.
It's very scary. It's scary from us too, and the international community has to be aware of the fact that, and I said this a lot more often when Bush was president, is that this country is a very, very deeply divided country, and you know, there are maybe 49% of us, 49% of us, that are really don't understand much at all, and they think the same about us. I understand your concern, and I agree with it. We're in a big hole. And we're getting out of it. I think we will get out of it. I think when you look at the polls and you see that, yes, 54% of Americans would now finally vote for an atheist, that's great. But more importantly, in that same poll, 70% of the under 30 crowd would vote for an atheist. 70%. Yeah. So that means that in 20 years, 70% of the under 50 crowd would vote for an atheist, assuming no growth. So, I think the trends are on our side. I think we're going to win. But yes, I think your concern is very warranted, and I think the international community needs to keep yelling so that our politicians will hear us.
Yeah, and also, I would like to say, it is kind of dangerous that, well, pretty much we're radical with our religion, and for that matter, we own 50% of the world's arms.
Well, we are radical with our religion, and it's a very, very scary thing. We have a lot. We put more money into our military than the next 10 countries combined, I believe, including China. It's a very, very scary thing to know that we have that much power, and the only thing that's guiding our ethics is the preachers who say it's our job to spread Christianity throughout the world. It's a very scary thing.
Yeah. Very reminiscent of the Crusades.
I'm the head of the Danish Atheist, not the head of Danish side, but the international relationships. And talking about the international community, one of the problems we at least have here in Denmark is the apathy. People don't really care, even though we've got a state church, we have priests who don't want to bury someone because they're homosexuals. But still, we, the atheists in Denmark, always get the, why do you care? And what would you tell the people that tell you, why do you care about what the religious people, why can't you just leave them alone?
Because it's their job not to leave us alone. Okay, remember, we're not talking a group of equals here. We're not talking, I'll let you do your thing, you let me do my thing. If that were the case, they'd be right. But the Christian people in this world are not content to let us do what we want to do. Their job is to convert us. Their job is to save the world for Jesus, just like the Muslim's job is to save the world for Allah or bring the world to Allah. This is not a live and let live world, and Christianity and Islam are not live and let live religions. They are live my way, or I'll try and change you, or I'll try and conquer you, or in some cases, or I'll try and kill you. So I think when we're talking to apathetic atheists, we have to drive home the point that religion is not just a different thought pattern from atheism. Religion has an evangelical point of it, an evangelical aggressive stance by default. American Atheists is known as the hard line of the atheist movement. But we do not preach, we do not push atheism. Okay, we push tolerance for atheism, and we push atheists to come out of the closet, and we push for awareness of atheism in the theistic community, but we do not try to convert theists to atheists because it's none of our business. But the other side of the coin is not an even side. They're not trying to stay out of our business. They want us to become Christians, and they want to use the state to make us Christians. And if they can't make us Christians, they want to make our kids Christian, which is why so many people, again, in this country don't know evolution. They have been taught against it. So people need to understand that religion and atheism are not the different sides of the same coin. Religion will never be a live and let live situation. It's always going to be a live my way or the highway or I'll kill you. Atheism is not like that. And that's the problem that you're facing when you're trying to motivate an atheist, because they have this live and let live mentality, and they project that mentality onto the theists, and it's not true at all.
Yeah, and also another problem is, well, you're staying it's hard to stay apathetic, especially when they're influencing the law, because things as simple as casting things like, well, women should be able to have a free contraception, and also, yeah, you get it, well, those kind of things. The only reason why they don't really pass is because, well, people say that it ruins the plan for God.
Right. And that's coming from a Catholic country. Religion really does, for example, religion really does hinder social issues. For example, right now, this week, in fact, there are parliamentary hearings going on whether or not a doctor can intervene and perform a medically necessary termination. That's been being debated now in my country in 2013, and it's only and it had to take a national tragedy for that to happen. And would that would that be the case if it were not for the Catholic religion and the way it is established in our country?
Of course not.
My country.
Of course not. And what are they trying to do? They're trying to make the non-adherents behave like adherents. They're trying to make the non-Catholics behave like Catholics, obey the Catholic dogma by law. That's what they're doing. And that's not something that atheism does. That's not something that anything that I would do is. But that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to use the law to make non-Catholics act like Catholics and obey the Catholic law.
I'm gonna have to cut you off here. We don't have a whole lot of time left, and we do have another caller. I'm gonna have to sign off. Dana, it was good to have you on. Good to have you ask questions to Dave. So thank you, Dana, for coming on. We're gonna have to bring on our next caller, Zulu, if you wouldn't mind.
All right.
Because unfortunately, we only have an hour with Dave, so we have to keep moving.
Whatever.
All right. Our next caller is Jay. Jay, welcome to the show. What do you have to ask for Dave?
Good evening. Hi, David.
Hello, Jay.
You said very interesting things in your interview with Fox. I call Fox a non-logic channel.
Yeah.
So they ask you about the reaction of a Muslim when you put the poster about Islam and other religion. And you said the reaction from Muslim was something like good. No. You said the reaction from Muslim was it's not bad. They told me it is free country. You can say what you want.
Yep.
Sometimes you say that. Correct me, please, if I am wrong. Sometimes I feel atheists in West, they are not give the Islam what it deserves. They treat Islam like it is forgiving religion, it is good religion, it's acceptable religions. You are not even criticize them. You appear them like you appear Islam. I don't criticize people, I criticize religion. You appear religion, Islam religion, at it is sometimes it is cool, indirect. Of course, I know this is not your intention, but in some way or another, you did that. Not only you, David, but a lot of atheists in West. And that makes our work, our fighting against discrimination and injustice and awful and violence in Islam, that make our work as atheists or seculars so hard and difficult.
Okay.
And you add another weight on our shoulder, and we are already fighting so hard to be survive in Middle East, because we are get every single they sometimes threat for death or for a lot of things. So please, guys, don't do that. I know it is the violence come from Islam make some of you may be afraid because Christianity is not that violence like Islam. Islam kill you, the people, radical people kill you directly. And even that there is, in Quran, there is a text, kill you if you are different than Islam. But even so,
Dave, respond to what I already have said.
Because we
only, don't have a whole lot of time. So.
Yeah, we only have Dave for a few more minutes.
Jay, I want to first jump in and say thank you for your call. I appreciate what you've had to say. I have been openly critical of Islam on numerous occasions, and I can't quite think of any time when I've actually been soft on them. American Atheist draws Muhammad on Draw Muhammad Day, even though Draw Muhammad Day has been dropped by the founder, because we find it important to protect our freedom. I've also launched a Twitter campaign, which is a hashtag Islam is barbaric, which basically has people carrying signs talking about the realities of Islam. The truth is the truth, though. And when we put up that sign, the Muslims were very, very copacetic with it. They were. Now, that's the Muslim people in New Jersey. That's not Islam. That's the Muslim people in New Jersey. And remember, I've already said Islam, New Jersey is a very diverse place. And I think they know how to go along to get along. I have said on many occasions that Islam is a primitive and barbaric religion that does not deserve any respect. And we have just recently, American Atheist has joined the International Humanist and Ethical Union so that we can fight against blasphemy laws in the United Nations. So I'm sorry that, first of all, I want to say I'm sorry you have the perception that I'm soft on Islam or that American Atheist is soft on Islam. I'm sure you're correct that other atheist organizations are soft on Islam because they're afraid. We are not. We put up that billboard in Arabic in a religious Muslim town because we wanted to stare down the Islamic threats, the implied Islamic threat that you cannot criticize Islam. And we will be doing it again. However, I will like to tell you, Jay, that if you find American Atheists doing something that is excessively positive for Islam, I want you to call me and call me on it, because I don't believe I've been doing that. So I thank you very much for calling. We are on your side 100%, and we are not afraid of criticizing the backwards and primitive religion that is Islam and their false prophet who raped a child.
I want to add the Danish Atheist side is not afraid either. I think one of the big important thing is that we need to support the atheists in the Middle East, the Pakistani groups who's a member of Atheist Alliance International. We need to support the atheists who have to hide in Muslim communities. I have friends who are atheists but have to say they're Muslims because they fear for their own safety within their own family.
Yes.
It's very important for us to help those people, but I don't think that the major national organization are being soft on Islam.
Yeah, in fact, if I could say, I think it's more like they're trying to take care of the problem in the here area, as in, I guess the reason why is since Christianity is a lot more active in the West, such as in the U.S., Islam, isn't really seen as too big, but of course I know that it's a big problem, and that it can be a big problem, but of course, I guess, it's not exactly that we're soft, more like we're trying, we have to focus our battles in our own grounds, I guess is what it's more like.
Well, yeah, remember, what American Atheist is doing is trying to protect the battle between church and state. and almost all of that battle is being forged by Christianity. So we find ourselves fighting Christianity much more often than we find ourselves fighting the Christian, the Muslims and the Jews. That doesn't mean, it doesn't mean we're soft on it. It doesn't mean we think that they're more reasonable or less barbaric. It means that they're not trying to force their way on us, and or at least not by using the federal government.
And the same thing we have in Denmark, where we have a state church that is Christian. So our main focus is on the state church as well. But we don't forget about the Muslims who want to impose their own sort of vendetta, self-justice laws in their own small ghetto communities. We don't forget about those. But our main objective is those who try to impose the laws that hurt everyone in society.
Okay, I think.
All right. Yeah, we're approaching the first hour of our show. Dave, I know you said that you really had an hour to spare, so I guess we're going to go ahead and just wrap it up here for you, if that's okay.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on the show and letting me speak. It's wonderful being in a situation after coming off of O'Reilly and Hannity to actually be able to respond with complete sentences, and I don't have to rush. I would like to mention that we have a big national convention coming up. It's our 50th anniversary convention. It's going to be in Austin, Texas at the end of March. The website is atheists.org, and it's probably going to be our largest convention ever. We booked a larger set of rooms for this convention than we did for the Reason Rally, and we already have sold out that hotel. We're already in an overflow situation. So if you can come to this convention, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have live music. We're going to have a comedy show. We're going to have a pub crawl, and we're going to have our third annual costume dinner where everybody can come as your favorite god or atheist or whatever. So I hope everybody can at least consider coming to that. Austin, Texas, an Easter weekend. And check out online on atheist.org. We are suing the IRS for fair taxation, and I think we're going to win. But yeah,
atheist.org or atheists in plural.org?
It's plural. Atheist. A-T-H-E-I-S-T-S.
Yeah. Okay.
.org. And there's all sorts of good information on there, and we're going to be and read up on that lawsuit. We didn't really talk about that because it's not really applicable to an international audience, but we are suing our tax system to get rid of the preferential treatment for churches. And it's going to be a very big lawsuit, and I'm pretty sure we're going to win, so it's going to be great. But I do have to go. My voice is cutting out, and I do have other things that I need to take care of. I want to thank you all for coming, and thank you all the callers and the typers for the questions.
All right. Thank you very, very much, Dave. Everyone in the chat room, thumbs up. And there's a link down below the chat room for the American Atheists. So click there for information. Everyone, thanks to Dave. Good night.
Thank you, Dave.
Or good afternoon.
Thank you for coming on, Dave.
Thank you.
Take care, everybody.
Pleasure.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, Jay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we got a thumbs up in the chat room for Dave. Very good. As a reminder, this will be uploaded onto our iTunes, the entirety of the interview, plus the rest of the show that we're going to be doing here. We do have another hour to fill, so I guess this is going to be a discussionary period about what just happened, the whole interview and any points that were made. If it's okay, I'd like to kind of open this up by saying that I did take a little bit of issue which was the idea that religion in itself is not a live and let live ideal. And because I know that at the very least the American Americans United for the Separation of Church and State are very much a religion organization as far as their members are concerned, very Christian. They're headed by a Christian. Lots of religious secularists in that whole organization. The secular values that are found in the United States itself were founded by Christians. The Supreme Court over the years that has ruled on laws that have promoted a secular country and secular laws are majoritively religious people. So I do think that there is some connection to be had if we're trying to if we're trying to promote secular values, then certainly we can work alongside at least some religious people, especially the liberal kind.
Okay,
yeah. The moderate.
In the Danish Age Society, we've been temporary allies throughout our history with the Baptists and the Catholics, who also want to separate state and church in Denmark. So, of course, but they have their own agenda for that, of course. But there are also the non-proselytizing religions, as Dave mentioned earlier, about the Jews who are not really proselytizing. So you can't really say that they are pushing religion onto others. But for the vast majority of religions, Christianity and Islam, I would say with good confidence, without fearing that I'd generalize too much, to say that they're actually trying to push religion into society.
Can I just butt in very quickly? We have to drop you, Jay, because believe it or not, we do have another caller coming in after this. So thank you again, Jay. It's always great to have you on.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for being on,
Jay. Thank you, guys.
I do think that there is a little bit of overgeneralization going by saying that Christians and Christianity and Muslims and Islam itself are trying to sort of push their particular religious values. I mean, certainly you'll find that within the, at the very least, the push there, the Christian right. There's also most of the fundamentalist Muslims, I'd say, would fall under that category. But there are fundamentalists and there are liberals, or at the very least, people that are secular, that are within any sort of group. I mean, you'll find atheists that would prefer us to actually not be a secular society, but an atheistic one, and say that there should be no religion and no respect to religion anywhere. And there are atheists out there that would be totally cool with outlawing Santa Claus, because Santa Claus is not true, and we need to focus on being an atheistic society. And these kinds of atheists exist. So as long as those kinds of atheists exist, and as long as there are Christians and Muslims that are capable of working with us and are willing to work with us, I think that would be very important to, at the very least, acknowledge. And I do think it is a little overgeneralized to say that Christianity and Islam, at their core, are just trying to push this very blasé,
If I want to elaborate on that, what I meant basically is the missionary actions of it. Their holy books tell them to go out and give the good word to people. That's how I see them, as trying to push the religion. And well, not necessarily that they want to change the laws of the country, but they still live and let live, the whole proselytizing thing. That's what I see as trying to push religion onto others.
Yeah, like Uganda.
True.
You know, like that.
I mean, their holy books also say that the world is 6 to 10,000 years old, and you'll see maybe.
Of course.
In the United States has the most people who believe that, and even then, that's under half the country, which is still not good, obviously. But it's something to bear in mind that many people who would consider themselves Christians or Muslims or any of these other different types of religions, Judaism, Hindus, all these different types, in general, are fairly liberal about their beliefs. And that's something to definitely try and align yourself with, especially since we are such a minority in the United States. At the most, you could say the most liberal numbers you can give for the amount of atheists in the United States are about 20%, and that's not enough to get any sort of legislation passed or defended. We need to align ourselves with some people who agree with us, be them religious or not.
All right, I'll bring in the caller here, Paulie. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I most certainly can, fellas. I just first of all wanted to say I really appreciate the panel. I wish I could have been here for the whole first hour. But there's been some fantastic points brought up that have been covered since I tried to call in the beginning. Thanks again to Dave for being here. For me, I do not claim to be an atheist, first of all. I understand the meaning of doing so and why, but it just... To me, it personally just feels like another label. I shouldn't have to proclaim that I am anti something. If I could finish real quick, I have more of a libertarian approach, if you will. that I think we should all just kind of be left alone. And I agree that the separation between church and state is probably the biggest issue I have. I don't understand why in the religious community, if you will, that there is not the understanding that the laws for every man should not be written by a few that have their beliefs based on faith, which is nothing more than a lack of evidence to substantiate their claim. So I appreciate what you guys are doing, and I really just wanted to take a minute and say thank you, and just say that I'm here for the support, whether or not I call myself an atheist or not. I appreciate each and every one of you.
Yeah, it's totally cool if you don't want to call yourself an atheist. I'm personally fine with that. I know plenty of atheists that it's weird. I probably know the most atheists out of anybody in the panel, and this is a bit of an assumption on my part, that actually actively dislike the atheist community at large. Dislike the whole idea of movement atheism, dislike the whole idea of politicizing atheism. And I can kind of see their points, especially when you have places like or movements like Atheism Plus trying to substantiate a very liberal feminist ideology and political ideology and trying to tie that to atheism, which, I mean, if you're going to do something like that, you have to understand that you're validating everything that Fox News is saying about this whole discussion. That it is, in fact, the God-fearing conservative Christians versus the godless atheist liberals. You're confirming that by saying, yeah, we are the liberals, we are the feminists, we are the pro-liberal social programs, and we are also the atheists. And by doing that, you're confirming what they say, and it's just counterproductive as far as I'm concerned.
Sure. No, I couldn't agree more. Strangely enough, I'm a big proponent of old guys that have a very philosophical approach, like McKenna and those guys, you know, and for me, it's just quite simple. If we continue to tile emotions and feelings over with very simple words and data sets, it makes it difficult to try to convey the emotional context behind that word. It's a tough call. I agree.
So I think one of the big issues.
A fellow out there by the name of Non-Stamp Collector. A lot of folks within the atheist community are aware of him. I don't know if you guys are or not, but he did a speech. It's been a couple of years back, comparing the whole, you know, you have to believe in Yahweh because you claim you're an atheist and you wouldn't argue it otherwise, with comparing it to an imaginary religion and belief in this five-roboted figure called Voltron. And to this day, it's one of my absolute favorite videos. I think he summed it up so well.
There are a lot of leaders within the atheist community that I think can be sufficiently listened to as being very decent at what they do, but even then, they're still fallible. I mean, I consider Richard Dawkins' ideas to be very good for the most part, but then every once in a while he'll say something like, we shouldn't vote for Romney because he's a Mormon, and we should vote for Obama because I personally think he's a closet atheist. Like, that's not very helpful. It's said with such a strange idea to it, like, oh, Obama's a rational person, therefore there's no possible way he could be a Christian. Like, that doesn't help us.
He's part of Church of Christ. He's part of Church of Christ, from what I remember.
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty much established that he's a Christian, just about every way that you can think of. They went to his church, they've looked it through his history, he's been a Christian for decades. And yet, no, I don't believe he is.
His father was atheist.
It's almost as silly as the people who are trying to color him as being a Muslim, a secret called closet Muslim. It's that level of, there's no evidence behind this claim. You're just kind of like making it just because of some sort of personal political bent.
Well, actually, he's been called everything from Muslim, a Hindu, an atheist, an agnostic, and so far they haven't reached space alien, or have they?
I'm not sure if they have. I don't. It would be fun to see that, though. Sam Harris has declared that.
Apparently, he's a clusterfuck of religions, according to the religious right. It isn't everything.
Yeah. Neil deGrasse Tyson has declared that Obama is a space alien. That would be a fun headline.
They didn't say that he was that he could be a space alien because there was a scar on him. They believed that that his skin was actually sewed onto him for a disguise. But I'm not sure if this is a parody or not, but of course I just remember hearing it in my 11th grade year.
But as comedic as it might sound, if our president gets up and thanks God during his speeches, I don't care what label we put on it. For me, it's offensive.
Yeah, I wouldn't find it offensive. Personally, I don't find it offensive if he's going to thank God, because that is his personal beliefs, and I'm not one to say you're not allowed to have whatever personal beliefs you have. And he's not making a political statement by thanking God. That's just something that he thinks is part of his personal belief set. So long as he's not like ending a bill in God told me to write this bill, so long as he's not saying because I'm a Christian I need to promote this particular political ideology, so long as that stuff isn't happening, I'm not offended. What I am offended by is when take, for instance, the Democratic convention that happened this past year, where they decided against the majority, as far as I'm concerned, we're going to add God in here whether you like it or not. I'm like, no, I'd rather you not.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, any other points?
What?
Paulie, any other points?
No, that was it. Fellas, I appreciate it again. Again, thank you. I'll go ahead and graciously bow out and listen to the rest of the conversation. Thank you again.
Right, been great having
pleasure
you,
having you on.
Thanks for having you on. Thank you for calling in.
Well, that was fun.
Do we have any more callers?
Hold on. I'll just get them. So please talk.
All right. We'll fill in the time as he's getting the callers.
CS was saying something in the chat. Apparently the Atheism Plus people were offended
Hello.
By our show today.
Oh, great. The Atheism Plus people were offended by our show. Yeah. Awesome. I love it.
Stick to humanism, not Atheism Plus.
C-Bear, can you make like a little link in the chat there to whoever tweeted about us and said, these fuckers. I love it. I would love it if you link that.
I think we have a Fender Yorkshire on call right now.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
I am doing great. I have a few things I'd like to say or maybe discuss. The first one I kind of want to discuss, because I guess that was the last thing that Lenny brought up, was the Democratic National Convention thing, because I saw a lot of atheists complaining about that, and I found that, I have to say, I find the complaints about that rather ridiculous. Firstly, I mean, yes, I get it, there were shenanigans going on with the DNC, but having 18 goddamn floor fights over whether or not this should be in the, you know, the stupid, non-binding, completely, like, no force of legal law sort of document about what the party kind of pushes. Like, I found the fact that people were still fighting over it kind of silly on either side. But to be honest, as an atheist, I don't think the Democrats should have taken that out of their party platform to begin with. I think they should have left the original language in that they had in the 2008 party platform, because it was in there. And I think that taking it out did nothing but give the Republicans something to basically beat the Democrats over the head with, especially the shit that was going on the floor. So I think that Obama made the right decision in terms of basically saying, you know what, screw it, put it back in the platform.
So you see it sort of as the same thing as the sort of when Atheism Plus comes up and they're trying to promote their political ideology and tying it to atheism, leaving God out of the Democratic platform is sort of the same thing. It's validating the whole conservative Christians versus the godless liberal rhetoric.
Kind of, and I think, yeah, mostly, and I also think there are more important things to really be focusing on, like, you know, I think David Silverman is one of the people who said he wouldn't vote for Obama because of that sort of thing, if I'm not mistaken. I saw a lot of other people saying they were going to vote for Jill Stein or wouldn't vote for Obama because of the because of that thing with the Democratic National Convention. And my response to that is, well, if Romney had managed to pick up your state and that had given him the election, would you all be issuing apologies to all the homosexuals you all sold out because, you know, you were, you know, had a little hissy fit because, you know, someone put a word you didn't like back in the convention platform? That was kind of my sort of thing. Like, there are more important things to worry about. And when I look at the atheist community at large, I'm one of those people who hates the atheist community that Lindy was referring to, I see a lot of whining about things that aren't really all that important. Like every time someone goes after, you know, it says "In God We Trust" on our money, or the fighting over, say, that monument in Rhode Island that no one cares about, there are far more important threats to secularism in the United States than those sorts of things. And it just comes across as extremely petty, and I would rather have us focus our efforts on things that actually matter and working with Christians or other religious people who are actually, you know, moderate and want to protect the separation of church and state, because most secularists, at least in the United States, are Christian or some, or, you know, theist in general. Most people in favor of gay marriage are theist. Most people who have the sort of beliefs that are popular in the atheist community happen to be religious, and I would rather work with those people than just kind of tout, you know, toot my little atheist horn and pretend that those people don't exist.
Yeah, I would ask if there's like a particular example. Like, you say that there are more important threats to the idea of secularism in the United States than, and I would say that the statue in Rhode Island is probably one of the least threatening. But what are the, like, more threatening examples that you can think of right now?
The lack of gay marriage still would probably be one of the big ones. Mm-hmm. The restrictions on abortions that are being passed at the state level. Like, say, the transvaginal ultrasound thing that failed in Virginia, I believe accepted inside of Texas. I believe it passed there. A lot of the other sort of restrictions they try and do to get around Roe in terms of, like, again, here in Virginia, although I think they managed to put a hold on it, where they said, oh, now all abortion places where you perform abortions have to be counted as, like, outpatient surgery centers, so you need to have hallways of X width and all of these things, conveniently just slightly larger than all of the current buildings that are used for abortions, you know, like by Planned Parenthood, those sorts of things. The fact that if you are a woman in the military, although I think this might have changed recently, I think it changed in the NDAA 2013, but the whole, if you're a woman and you get raped, you cannot get an abortion on a DOD facility. So let's say you were a soldier in Afghanistan and you were on a convoy and you were raped by someone, as, you know, female, and you were raped and you got pregnant because of that and you were stationed in Afghanistan. You better hope that DOD is willing to ship you back to fucking Germany or back to the States so you can get an abortion. Otherwise, you're fucked. Those are things that actually affect people's lives, because I'm sorry, a statue in Rhode Island does not affect anyone.
Well, no, it really doesn't.
Well, to be fair, go on. You were gonna say
Well, I was just going to move on to the international problems that are secular problems within other different countries. If you had something that you wanted to add about this one.
Oh, I would like to add, well, to be fair, or personally, I would say something against those public monuments basically that have religious themes, because of the argument that, well, the only reason why it doesn't matter to people is because it represents their religion. Had it been something like a Dome of the Rock thing on public land, well, people then would be angry. Because the only difference between the two is just that people actually, it represents them more, like, seems like. So,
I'm not a Christian, and I never have been, and I don't really find those sorts of things. Someone asked me about Jessica Ahlquist. I would say no, because she's in a school, and I would say there's a difference between a school and a war memorial, and I would say there's a difference between a war memorial that's already been erected and has been in place for 90 years than, you know, like plaques or signs and that sort of crap in a school. And a lot, and like one of the things that really bothers me about, say, the war memorial in Rhode Island, here's my main problem with this. I think anyone who's focusing on the war memorial in Rhode Island but will not focus on more important war memorials that have far more visible Christian iconography is a coward. If people want to go after and say we can't have war memorials that have Christian crap on them, then they should grow some balls and constitutionally challenge the Canadian Cross of Sacrifice that is in Arlington National Cemetery. They should sue the government to get them to tear down all of the World War I and World War II memorials that the federal government pays for with tax dollars overseas that currently operate, that are filled with statues and pictures of angels, crosses, all kinds of Christian iconography. And I don't see many people arguing that we should tear down all our World War II memorials. I'm not talking about, you know, someone, say, having a cross on their headstone. I'm saying, like, the actual memorial paid for by the U.S. government has, like, Jesus crap on it. Like, on all these places. Like, not just, like, some individual soldier's cross.
I would agree with the thing that there should, like, a certain cutout point that says that memorials made after a certain date should be. Because see, in Europe, in the European Union, there was some party that tried to make legislation against every Christian, what do you call it, iconography? How do you say that?
Iconography.
Iconography, yes, thank you. The problem is, if you look at Scandinavia, our flags are bloody crosses, the Christian crosses. We have so many crosses that it wouldn't be feasible to get rid of all of them. But I would say that if new memorials should be erected, that they should be religious neutral.
I agree. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Like, obviously, if we're building something now, or you know, in the past like 10 or 15 years, or in a decent, recently amount of time, then that shouldn't be allowed to stand. But you know, like I see people complaining about the older memorials. Yeah, like if we wanted to build, a, say, like a memorial for the Afghanistan War or Iraq, and they were like, "Hey, let's put a cross on it and put all, you know, put angels and like Jesus crap on it," then yeah, then that shouldn't be allowed to fly. But you know, all of these older memorials, I mean, with a lot with the sort of logic that a lot of the atheists I see kind of pushing, we would have to tear down about half of the public buildings in Washington D.C.
I mean, it's regularly brought up. It's regularly brought up that there's biblical iconography, not iconography, but wording placed all over national buildings. I'm pretty sure Congress has something on their building. The Supreme Court has something on theirs.
They have the Ten Commandments. The Supreme Court.
Yet we don't tear those things down. And I don't think that the reason that we have them up in the first place is because we're trying to be a Christian nation, but because Christianity, like it or not, is in fact a part of our founding. I mean, many of our founding fathers were, as a matter of fact, Christian. And they're the ones who came up with these secular ideas in the first place. So these are important things in our history at the very least. And I would say that even if we don't agree with Christianity, even if we don't agree with the values espoused by many Christians that they put to their Christianity, at the very least we can understand that Christianity itself served as a pretty important start-off point to our country's politics.
Yeah, and I don't think it's possible to really divorce Christianity in the symbolism and the sort of language from the West. I don't think you can kind of get rid of that from the stuff that's already there. And a lot of it kind of seems the best comparison I think I can make would be it's kind of reminds me of a lot of the people who want to say go back and censor Huck Finn, I think, or Tom Sawyer, I think. We have to take the N-word out. You know, that sort of thing.
And yeah, there was talk of in Sweden when we passed laws against discrimination against homosexuals, there was talk of banning the Bible, which was, I mean, it's hilarious, but you know, because it's hate speech.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Hate speech. That's another reason.
I can agree that it would be considered hate speech, but come on.
Well, as an American, I am completely against the concept of hate speech in general. But yeah, like I mean, even if I did accept and if people accepted them as valid, how would you ban something like that? Like you cannot understand Western history and literature without the Bible.
Oh, exactly. And then
it's sort of like an Orwellian feeling that there's people out there who want to go back and rewrite the past, basically, to fit the present.
Well, exactly. That's why I get angry at a lot of atheists who say, like, religion's never done anything good or it poisons everything. And I'm like, well, if you look at a lot of the social movements, like a lot of the progressive movements that have arisen in the past, like, two centuries and a lot of the expansions of freedom and civil rights and that sort of thing, at least in the United States, I'm not sure how it was in Europe, but in the United States at least, a lot of this was done off of the back of evangelical Christians. A lot of them, like, the whole sort of, like, right-wing evangelical Christians – Christianity thing is actually a rather sort of new movement. If you go back to like say the 1800s and the early 1900s, like all the people saying we need to take care of the poor, we need to be tolerant of other people. These people were Christians.
Don't forget free education.
Yeah, all these people were Christians.
Jesus. I would say I mostly agree with you on this, but going back to the 1800s, it's important to bear in mind that Christianity was also used as a justification to some of the things that other Christians were going against, sort of like slavery was one of the big things.
Personally,
Christianity can as a point of fact, the Bible has been used to justify completely opposing political ideology. So it's not something that I would think is very good to point to as being any sort of foundation of a political movement.
Yeah, I would have to agree with Big because, well, I think this, that most of those movements started because of someone else's personal beliefs. And they just used religion to try and get a following.
I think it's a very complex matter. I think one of the reasons why there's such a strong social helping community in America is also politically. They don't have that strong government that most European countries have. So people tend to gather in communities where people help out each other because the state is as minimal as it can get in the United States compared to Europe.
Yeah, I would agree with a lot of that. But, I mean, Lundy, the point I was trying to make is not necessarily, like, you know, religion all good and all that. I mean, I just want to clarify, because a lot of people say it never does anything good or that they always act like it. It's this inherently negative force. And
it's
I think
a
religion in and of itself is neutral.
Right. It can be used either way, I think the point I'm trying to make. And I can agree with that.
Yeah, and I think that's what more people need to focus on is, like, it really depends how you use it, and I don't care for religion, and I would be completely fine if everyone stopped being religious. But I think when atheists I think a lot of atheists do with history and politics and sociology what a lot of creationists and those sorts of Christians do with science, if that makes any sense. I think there are a lot of atheists who kind of play fast and loose with the facts, like a lot of Christians will do, or Muslims, or whatever, when it comes to science. So,
greetings to Abby Normal One to the conversation. Good to have you here, Abby.
Hi.
Hi, Abby.
That was weird. Abby's sort of YouTube is sort of YouTube's resident, very very liberal, like socialist, commie Christian.
Thanks.
You're welcome. You dirty hippie. So did you want to add anything to the conversation we were having?
I was just saying that I've written papers about this. I'm Christian, but music and history and religion and literature and history all were kept for basically hundreds of years. Sorry, I went to a different room. Hundreds of years by monks. I mean, if we hadn't had them, we wouldn't have, you know, I can't say we would never have had it, but we wouldn't have the same amount of data still from that time period that we have now. They protected it for marauders because people were afraid of attacking churches.
I would say one thing about that. Actually, the Muslims, I would say, were actually a big contribution back then because Christians took back the Spanish peninsula, a lot of the philosophy books that we have today from the Greeks are actually preserved by the Muslims because of the more fundamentalist Christian tended to burn them. About the marauders not attacking churches, the Danish Vikings didn't really care about that in England.
I know, but in general, I'm not even just saying marauders. Yeah. I'm saying just when they would have altercations, I wasn't really talking about the Muslims, but I mean, Muslim people also are religious, and they did keep a lot of the information from back hundreds of years, and also a lot of the Christians and Muslims were very instrumental in starting the whole scientific theory and engineering and all of these other things that some anti-theists are very quick to, you know, poo-poo, to shrug off. And it's completely unfair. And then also when it comes to modern university study, most of the university systems were started by the clergy. The Scola Musica, which was a choir school, and that's basically where we have our modern university system, was because people wanted to learn how to write and perform music properly for church. And so the way we started teaching education, and they would have to also learn rhetoric, all these other, like, the core things, math, philosophy, rhetoric, all these things in that university environment. And that is where we get how our education is structured.
But it's not interesting to see.
Sorry. Excuse me. Can I?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Marty.
Go ahead. Yeah. It's one thing. I mean, I totally acknowledge that religion has done good things, but there are two things. Is for one, was it religion or was it people who just happened to be religious? That's one thing.
And, it was religion. I just want to address that real quick. It was religion. Okay. I mean, if you look at Harvard and all the Ivy League schools and most of education, those were founded basically because of religion, not just people who were religious, but religion itself. Like Harvard,
they were seminaries.
Yeah, they were seminary schools for the most part. So
okay, fair enough. But my next point is, regardless of what religion has done, what good is it now? What good is it doing now that cannot also be achieved without religion? That's another.
I can name a few things that are not being done. A lot of foreign aid is only carried out because of religious organizations.
Could easily be done.
Okay, well, but
they're not.
Well,
but they're
the
not.
Point. Yeah, that's the point he's saying.
Hold on. It's not irrelevant because, well, one, no one's signing up to really go carry out a lot of these missions, and that's like saying, you know, well, Bob, you know, gave me a ride to the hospital, but I don't have to thank him because Jim could have easily done it as well. I mean, sure, there are maybe other, you know, sure, you could replace those, but right now, religion is doing these things that are good. I mean, I personally know someone who was the only person able to run, you know, aid convoys into Somalia when Idid was in charge, when she was working for, I believe, Islamic Relief Services is who she was working for then. But These groups exist. A lot of the foreign aid that goes out there is, you know, off of the backs of these religious people because they're the only ones who'll do it and go to some of these places.
And don't forget.
I think what we need to do there, if we're going to increase the sort of redundancy of religion that I think a lot of the people on this panel, with a couple exclusions, goes, if we're going to try and render religion redundant in these areas, what we need to do is we need to encourage the foreign aid done by secular institutions or something like Bill Gates is a whole charity when it comes to Africa.
And don't forget Doctors Without Borders.
Yeah.
Doctors Without Borders is also good. But what we should probably encourage is more of that, is what I'm saying. There are these organizations out there, but they're not highly volunteer organizations in comparison to the religious organizations that are offering help. I think this is something good to just compete on in general, is the religious are helping a lot of people, so let's try and help out more. It's a win-win here, regardless of what ends up happening.
But when we look at the transparency organizations that are looking into these help organizations, many of the very religious helping organizations actually spend more money on proselytizing than actually helping people. And to my point about the education thing, that it is kind of interesting that we come to a point today where we see Americans who actually want to prevent their kids to learning too much because it takes away the religiosity of many people, the better educated they are.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry, but I know you talked about the proselytizing thing earlier, but any organization is going to proselytize regardless if it's religious or not, and it's about not necessarily in the way that it's not necessarily a religious proselytizing, but join our organization. Our organization is great.
What I meant is that they spend more proselytizing than helping. I know all the organizations want people to back them up, but the religious organizations tend to put more effort on proselytizing than the aid than secular organization does.
Well, no, that's not necessarily true either. I mean, maybe about proselytizing, yeah. But depending upon the charity organization, mm-hmm. a lot of times their money is going back into advertising for their organization.
So it's not very religious organizations, those who have really low star rating on those rating sites for which organizations you should donate to. they always get a minus star because when they look at where the money goes, it goes back into administration or proselytizing instead of actually going out for aiding the people that they say they want to help.
And I'm going to say
point that the religious people tend to, the religious organizations tend to lay on the low scale on that compared to Red Cross and Doctors Without Borders, for example.
Why is it bad if people proselytize, though? I mean, that's another thing I'm kind of confused about here, is that people seem to be calling that a bad thing. And I'm sorry, but if you're starving and you're, I mean, if someone's starving, I think it's more important to give them, you know, a fucking sandwich, even if it comes with a religious sort of thing. And a lot of people complain about that. And you know what? If I'm giving someone something to free, then they can listen to my damn speech.
Yeah, yeah,
that's my standard.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying it's better than nothing. It is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still interesting to see that if it's, yeah, but it does also have to take in the mindset that they also want to save people because they believe in damnation or there's a heaven, for example, depending on what religion and what kind of denomination.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to receive perhaps a sandwich from some people who are going to help me, I would prefer it personally. And I'm, as somebody who is poor and has experienced extremely destitute situations, I would prefer, if I'm going to be given a sandwich by some people who are trying to help me out, that they leave out the religious stuff. I don't need that. It's not really necessary. If they're going to do it and they're going to give me, and they're the only ones giving me a sandwich, then I got to deal with it. But I would prefer that they not. And so I would promote organizations that don't do that, over the organizations that do.
Okay, see us there. I have to say, I'm sorry, but if you're going to really say that it's not charity, if you're doing it to benefit yourself, I'd really have to strongly disagree with that. Because there are a wide variety of reasons that people will give money to charity, including personal benefit in terms of just like, I feel better about myself because I gave money to someone who needed it. There are a lot of reasons for people to do it. And if someone, you know what, if Mitt Romney wants to give fucking $10 billion to help poor people because it'll make him look good, and if he ever wanted to run for office again, that would, you know, suit his political purposes, I don't care. Those poor people still got their damn money. I don't care why someone helps someone who's poor.
And a lot of the organizations do it because part of their organization is charity work, but also part of their organization is something else. And in order to get people to join in with their organization, they're going to want to proselytize, to recruit, to get people to do this, that, and the other thing so that they can benefit their organization. And it's not just a religious thing. Yes, a lot of religious organizations are about proselytizing and are about missionary work, but that's also how they get people to volunteer.
But also, no one is forcing anyone to donate to anyone, so you could pick who you want to donate to anyway.
Exactly.
I have to say that, like, just saying it's not charity just because you might have some other reason to do it. It's just a bit silly.
Yeah, it is a bit silly. I mean, personally, I give a charity whenever I have the spare cash.
No, I'll put it this way. Hey, Bear. Feel better. Hey, Bear. I have a question, Bear. Should they get rid of tax breaks for charity, for donating to charity then? So I'm able to read, but have you read a dictionary? Because one of the definitions of charity is just giving money to people who need it. It doesn't necessarily have to be for good reasons on behalf of the person giving.
You can't say it's not really charity because it is charity. It really is. It doesn't matter why someone's doing it. If I'm giving money to poor people, then it's charity. It doesn't matter if I'm doing it for nefarious reasons, like, aha, I get to save a bunch of money on my taxes. It doesn't really matter. It's still charity.
You're never going to find someone
who's donating to charity for a completely altruistic reason, because you are still making yourself feel better. You are benefiting society, and that benefits you. There is almost never a purely altruistic reason for charity.
I don't know, Bear. Sorry.
And you're never going to be able to tell someone's motives.
It doesn't really matter if they would continue to donate to charity if there were no tax benefits. It really doesn't.
Bear, did it make you feel good? Did you feel good giving money to other people?
I mean, Bear, Trolling with Logic and Skeptic TV have both hosted charity programs. Does it feel good to do these charity programs?
So you did not feel any sort of pleasure from donating? You didn't feel any sort of like, wow, I did something good today, you know, pat on the back, like, that's a good job, Bear.
I'm calling bullshit, Bear. No one does something just because they can. That's not a reason. You had a reason. You're just not under... You,
And you know what, Bear? Even if that's true, then good for you. You're the most moral person ever. Me, on the other hand, I don't give a fuck why someone's donating money. So how about do you want to remove the tax breaks on charity, on donating to charity?
Would you like to essentially give a good reason for these people who donate for tax break purposes to not donate more money?
I don't know if they would, or I don't know if they would keep donating or not, Bear, but I really don't care. I don't care why someone gives money to charity if they're giving money to charity.
Oh, and how can it not be both? Sure. CS Bear, why is this mutually exclusive? Why can somebody not save money and donate to charity? Why must it be either they're saving money or they're donating to charity? Why is it a mutually exclusive idea? Because it's not.
If you ask, yeah. I just don't think that the charity system should be corrupt because, like, some companies will actually donate to charities that go to themselves. Literally, they'll donate money, but literally just goes back to them. I think that's just corrupt.
Bear, I did read that last line, and sure, some people would donate less if there was less of a incentive for tax breaks to do it, but so what? They are still donating to charity right now. And I'm sorry, that is charity, but regardless of their reasons, that is definition of charity.
I'm not sure why this is even an argument. Some people do it for tax breaks. Care. I don't care. No one should care. No one should really care because it doesn't matter. Money is being given to people who need it.
CS Bear, how is that charity? Well, there was a sum of money that didn't go to poor people or people who needed it. Okay, there's a sum of money. It's charity because this sum of money is now going to people who need it who wouldn't have had it otherwise. That's charity. Regardless of the reasons why they did it, it's still fucking charity. I mean, but not all charities give to poor people. Yeah, I know, some help fucking animals and do other things. I'm saying in general, we're talking charity. Okay, charity does something nice and does good things. So they're giving to a charity, that's a charitable donation, and if you're just gonna, I mean, what, is this a classist thing? Like, are we just gonna bitch the rich because they have money and they can get a tax break for donating? Like, I don't really care why they're doing it. Yeah, and that's why I don't donate to the Salvation Army.
That's why, I mean, this isn't the exact reason, but I didn't donate to the Lost, what is it, the Lost Children? The Cody 2012 campaign people.
Are you talking about Donna? Lost Children.
Yeah, I didn't donate to those people because I knew that most of my money was just going to be going into advertisements for their particular campaign. So I didn't like that, and I wasn't going to donate to them. So there, what you do is you research who you're going to donate to.
Oh,
but
my
that
God.
Doesn't matter.
Bear, are you not paying attention? We were saying, yes, you can donate money and have it benefit people and have it benefit yourself at the same time. For instance, having public education helps me, I just fail to understand how you don't get that is still charity. Like, regardless of why they're giving it, they're still donating to charity. It's still a charitable donation by definition.
Seabear, you have a bachelor's in English, and you're arguing that charity doesn't count if it's done for a different reason. Now, personally, like, I can get into the philosophical point of it, and I could say that regardless of intent, the end result is still the same, and therefore you can still call it charity. Now, you can say that it's charity done for shitty reasons, but it's still charity. Regardless of whether or not you like the reasons they did it, it's still charity.
And Cato, why should churches not be tax exempt? Why should they not have tax exempt status? That's something no one's ever been able to explain to me, to my satisfaction. Why shouldn't a church have a tax exempt status?
Because otherwise it would be. I remember hearing maybe it's because it would break the boundaries of church and state.
So Seabear is saying that it doesn't really count as charity. It's not real charity if the person who's donating is getting more of a benefit than the people who actually receive the money. That makes no sense.
Okay, I think Bear, that if I'm let's say I'm Mitt Romney and I give $10 million to a charity that feeds starving people. I think those starving people get more benefit from the $10 million of charity in that they are still alive than I would get from my tax break.
But what if you gave it the $10 million to the Mormon church and by that it actually goes to himself because he's a bishop in one of the churches?
I don't care. He can give his money. I wouldn't consider that a good use of charity money, but if that's what he wants to do, then fine.
It's not helping the needy people. I think that's probably C.S. Bear's point. That if the money goes to people in need, actually, but actually
okay,
goes
to... I'm just going to ignore you then, Bear. That's fine.
So if you are, let's say, abusing the tax break system, that you're donating to, for example, an organization that you have a part ownership of, or a church that you're a member of, and the money would actually benefit you and your group rather than people in actual need. Is that a charity?
What else is it doing? It can be. It could be a 501c3 at the very least. Bear, you repeatedly said that if someone is giving money and it benefits them because of a tax break, that it's not charity. I'm sorry, that's just retarded, so I'm just going to ignore you. If other people don't want to ignore you, that's their business.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Bear, but you and I have argued on a personal level before, and this happens all the fucking time. You make an argument, and then I counter your argument, and then you say, that wasn't my argument, stop making stuff up and being dishonest. It's not our fault, you're inarticulate.
Okay,
we're addressing exactly what you said.
Let's move on.
Take the speed somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh, Seabear wants to join the call. Wonderful.
Oh, no.
Okay, do you know the definition of the word really?
I'm sorry. I'm just going to thank you for having me on the call. I'm going to run away.
Thank you for being here. I'm sorry you got very good
training. Thank you, Abby.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay. Bye.
Let's move on and find something else to talk about instead of bloody charities. And let's take that.
Charity, yeah. Everyone's focused on charities. Yeah, I don't really care about the discussion too much. I want to know about the
tax break thing. I mean, why shouldn't churches?
Yeah, but this is not a tax.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are not an economics show.
Go on, Tash. Trolling with economics, not trolling with logic. If it exists.
Okay, so. In the past hour, we've discussed the fact that the majority of people who are secular in the United States are, in fact, religious, and that we should ally ourselves with their efforts if we're going to be actually accomplishing anything. But there are goals in which we are trying to push ourselves towards that are not very beneficial towards a secular purpose, especially when there are better ideas. I wanted to, at that point, get into a specific topic, but I didn't have the time because we kind of got derailed into the taxation thing. I was specifically wanting to refer to Ireland's particular situation with abortion. Rob, you'd say that is probably a pretty valuable use of the time of secularists if they're trying
yes.
to. Yeah. So if the Catholic Church is saying they're saying no, you can't have any abortion no matter what, even if it saves lives. That's something to come in and say, sorry, but that's a religious reason. You can go fuck yourselves.
Yes.
Exactly. So mainly what you're saying is that the topics to concern ourselves with, for the most part, are the topics that concern the well-being of individuals. Like, if someone's life is going to get fucked over as a result of what's happening, and it's a religious thing that doesn't have any part in the federal government, that's when the efforts of the secular community should be focused on.
I would say there's obviously, If we were living in a world where the only threats to separation of church and state were, you know, like a monument in Rhode Island and that sort of crap, I think we would all be pretty happy with that sort of world. It would be a much better world than we live in now. I think, you know, obviously some threats are more serious than others. Not always legal threats. I mean, there's always social opprobrium that can go way too far that we have to address too. But, yeah, things like the abortion laws in Ireland or in parts of the United States, I think, are more of a threat to, like, secularism or people's lives than some other things are.
Okay, great. We only have about four more minutes left on the show. Very good conversation after David Silverman left. Very good part of the show when we interviewed him. Zulu, is there anything else we need to go over? Or?
I don't think so. It was really great having Dave on. Just a shame we couldn't get him for the full 2 hours.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
That would have been fun.
1 hour is
grand.
Yeah.
I missed Dave already.
Then I'm going to thank again For the recording's sake, I'm going to go ahead and thank Dave again for coming on to the show. I'm going to thank all of our callers for coming on to the show. Dana, Jay, Rob, Abby, all of you for coming on and having a very good discussion, very heated discussion at the end there. And thank you to all my fellow panelists for being on the show. And, thank you for Zulu for doing all of our mechanics work, because God knows we can't fucking get this thing to work if we don't have Zulu behind the show.
And yeah, just to quickly remind everyone, we are back next Sunday at our usual time. That's, 6 GMT and 1 PM Eastern. And we have Tracy Harris joining us.
Tracy Harris, going to be a fun show.
Yeah, we pretty much timed getting her on to perfection when you consider what happened on the Atheist Experience last week and what's happened since.
You should probably tell the people who don't really know who Tracy Harris is for recording.
Yep. You can do that, Lundy. You're the best at these things.
Well, Tracy Harris is one of the one of the current co-hosts on the Atheist Experience, and in my opinion, probably one of the best. She's very level-headed. She approaches issues from a very rational perspective. She's very good at explaining what it is the problem is in any sort of argument that they're having, whether it be political or religious or philosophical. Very good in general, just to listen to. She is one of the last two Atheist Experience hosts that we haven't had on the show yet. Yep. The other one being Jen Peoples, and I'm talking about current hosts. If we go back to all the different hosts, then there's quite a few. But she is probably going to be one of our best shows for the Atheist Experience hosts. I think she's going to be worth a good listen. And I encourage everybody to come take a look.
Yep. And just because people are asking this, our Facebook, our Twitter, the links to YouTube and iTunes, it's all below in the playground there. As I say, this will be uploaded within the next few hours, so keep tuned to the, stay subscribed to the YouTube channel, and you'll see it there. And am I the only one talking now? Is everyone gone?
Apparently.
Well, I'm just waiting for you to close out the show.
Yes. Yeah. So thank you very much, everyone. Good night, and we'll see you next week. Good night.
See you all.
See you next week. This should be very fun.